The latest now, Minnesota's attorney general plans to increase charges against former Minneapolis police officer Derek Chauvin to second-degree murder in George Floyd's killing. AG Keith Ellison said he will also charge the other three officers involved. He's expected to provide an update this afternoon. Floyd was killed last week while being arrested by Minneapolis police. The charges come after another night of demonstrations in Boston and around the country, protesting police brutality and honoring Floyd's memory. Boston protests last night were tense at times, but remained peaceful. Just south of the city, after several hours of peaceful protesting in Brockton, a second wave of demonstrations escalated, including clashes with police.
Don't shoot! Don't shoot! Don't shoot! Don't shoot!
This is the Brockton Enterprise, broadcasting live from downtown Brockton. We don't have much time, much juice in the batteries, but the police have moved forward on the protesters, shooting gas canisters. Protesters have been throwing fireworks at the cops and bottles. It's getting a little tense in downtown Brockton.
Sounds from last night, and we want to invite you to join the conversation. Did you go out yesterday to protest? What did you see? And what open questions do you have today? Call us. We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Let's begin now in Brockton. The Boston Globe's Hiawatha Bray, a regular here on Radio Boston, was recording the scene on his phone and ended up getting pepper sprayed by police. He joins us now. Hiawatha, how are you today?
Oh, doing fine. But you got to stay away from that pepper spray. That stuff, wow, it's lively.
Yeah, I imagine. So what happened to you last night?
Well, not that much. I don't want to exaggerate it. I definitely got hit by pepper spray. But it was part of the attempt by the police to seize complete control of the street and push people off of it at a time when people were throwing firecrackers, water bottles, all kinds of debris at the police. I don't want to exaggerate that either. It wasn't large numbers of people doing that. But there were some people who consistently were throwing projectiles at the police, and the police had this apparently very well thought out plan. They had this huge bunch of people behind barricades, and at regular intervals they would march the barricades forward and keep pushing people back towards Center Street and then under the bridge that goes under commuter rail and back toward, I forget the name of the street. But in any case, they were pushing us away and in the general direction of the Dunkin' Donuts. And as they were pushing people, they were urging people to go back, and I didn't have any kind of press credentials hanging off my shirt. Believe me, I have it hanging off now. But they just were spraying people with pepper spray to get them to move, and I was one of the people who got sprayed. And I suppose I could
get... So were you there? Were you there as a private citizen last night, just observing?
Oh, no, I was there to help with coverage for the Globe, and I was just feeding them stuff that ended up in some of the stories today. I mean, that's what you do when you're, you know, the fire bell rings. You just jump up and you go. And it was, you know, just something I unhesitatingly did because I'm a journalist. It's what we do. And I don't want to lose sight of the fact, I mean, it was really fascinating. If you talk to protesters, if you talk to other journalists, everyone there agreed that this was not a case of the police being abusive or unnecessarily aggressive. This was a case of the police just simply saying, we are in control here. You will do things our way. You know, Donald Trump got in a lot of trouble for talking about they need to dominate, and I can understand why, but there's a sense in which that's absolutely the way you have to go with a large group of people, some of whom are rowdy. You have to send this message.
So let's,
there are a lot more of us.
Let's pause
we
there.
We are in control here. Do it our way. And I think that's the way they did. The cops, I never saw any cop losing his temper. I never saw them flailing away at people, shrieking at people. They just said, move, back, 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 and kept moving people back. They were very disciplined.
Hiawatha, earlier the protests were peaceful. This was a different wave of
which
demonstration.
Yeah.
Okay, so you were not there for the protests at the middle school that
no,
were peaceful.
No, I was not. I was working on something else. I have other things to do. I was only out last night when I heard that things really went pear-shaped in the general area of the police station. Everything I've read from what happened, and I've talked to the mayor, I've talked to other people, this just was not happening earlier in the day. Everybody is absolutely, including other protesters. I talked to a person who was at the high school and at the middle school, and he said everything was just wonderful. It was so peaceful. It was orderly. So, the mayor was there. The police were taking a knee. Everything was great. It was at night that everything brewed up.
Why do you think that happened, Hiawatha?
because it's dark and people think they can get away with stuff. There were people who were just obviously angry. There were other people who were obviously having fun. And come on, let's face it. A huge amount of this is indeed the COVID backlash. People are sick of being locked in their houses. I think a lot of this was just people having an excuse to go out and act rowdy. I really do. I mean, the people who were there as serious political protesters were certainly there, and they were there throughout the day, absolutely. But I think some of the trouble probably came from people who just wanted to blow off steam.
Okay, so last question for you, Hiawatha. You do live in Brockton.
Yeah.
Looking back yesterday, how are you feeling as a resident of the city?
Actually, on the whole, I'm rather pleased and rather proud because of the behavior, I think, of our city officials. I think they handled it really well. I mean, there just was not any kind of excessive, abusive behavior on the part of anyone in charge. In addition, I think that the troublemakers that we saw made up a very small fragment of the people you saw there. Most people, even the ones who are angry, were not out there looking for trouble. Even the ones who were going up to the police and taunting them and shouting things at them were not looking for violence. I just don't think that this is a city full of angry, hateful people. And I actually feel better living in Brockton after what I saw.
Well, that's Boston Globe tech columnist and Boston Radio Boston regular Hiawatha Bray. Glad you're well, and thanks for joining us today. I appreciate it.
Oh, thank you.
So let's turn now to Boston last night. And again, join the conversation. Were you there? What did you see? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We have three guests for this conversation, all of whom we have spoken to in the last few days, and all of whom were there last night. First is one of the organizers of yesterday's protest, Monica Cannon Grant. She's the founder and CEO of the nonprofit Violence in Boston, which is focused on advocating for marginalized communities. Welcome back today, Monica.
Thank you for having me.
We also have Tito Jackson, former Boston City Councilor, Special Advisor to Parenting Journey, and Chief Executive of Verdant Medical. Tito, welcome back to you, too.
Thank you very much, but I work for Monica.
Fair enough. And Shigun Itawu. He's the Executive Director of the Black Economic Council of Massachusetts, co-founder of the Boston Police Camera Action Team. Welcome back to you as well.
I'm always happy to be anywhere that Monica and Tito are.
Excellent. So listen, I'm glad we have the three of you together. I'm going to start with some questions for Monica, because we had you on just before the protest yesterday, Monica. You told us you had 7,500 people registered. You thought you might get even more. Thousands turned out last night. How are you feeling today?
I feel overwhelmed. I feel grateful. I feel like we got our point across. And now the real work begins to fight for the pieces of legislation we discussed at the rally yesterday.
And what is that point that you feel like you got across last night?
I guess for me, it's people need to understand that protesting is a part of politics, and you can organize and pull people together, but you have to give them tangible things to walk away with to actually do. And that's what we did yesterday. We organized in such a way where we sent a clear message. And the message was, is that, yes, we're angry. We're tired of police brutality. You're not going to continue to kill us and not be held accountable. But along with protesting, we're going to hold you accountable on a legislative level. And I think we accomplished those things in regards to plugging people in. But we sent a clear message that because the protest was held in a community that is predominantly people of color, you won't come and tear up our community.
So, Tito, you and Monica worked closely together on this, or according to you, you worked for Monica on this. How would you assess the march last night?
It was a great success. Again, I think, one, the fact that a Black woman led this along with Black Lives Matter is actually notable. I also believe that having all of those folks, supporters, allies, I believe Monica calls them accomplices in this work, all come together and stand and say that Black Lives Matter, that Black bodies cannot continue to be destroyed. And Monica thoughtfully is working not only for folks to blow off steam, but actually has an agenda that is about making sure that Black bodies are protected. So I think that is absolutely critical. And it also shows that people can assemble in a peaceful manner in our own communities, and our voice and our First Amendment rights can be heard. So it was a great success, and I'm very proud of the work that Monica was able to pull together in our city, and I'm proud of Boston.
And Shigun, let me turn to you. You were there last night as an attendee. How do you think people were feeling out there last night as it was going on?
Well, you know, I've been to a number of protests here in Boston, which is not something to be happy about because it's all been about the same topic. But I have to say that yesterday's gathering of people, a sea of people, was probably one of the most uplifting and affirming experiences I've ever felt at one of these protests. And so I have to give a lot of credit to Monica and her team, not just Tito, but Black Lives Matter Boston and many of the others who work to make sure, you know, we don't always give credit or think about all the work that goes into making sure that folks are able to be there safely and, you know, all the mechanics that go into that. So, you know, a lot of kudos goes to the team that made that happen. But it was a phenomenal experience. But, you know, I already knew it was going to be because I've, you know, I have a lot of faith in the leadership of Monica and the rest of her team members. So it was a good experience for all of us.
Monica, I want to ask you one more question, then I'll turn to a call. You talked a minute ago about how part of the message you got across last night is that demonstration protest is part of the political process. As you think about that, explain what do you think is the right relationship between police and peaceful protesters, especially when the protest is specifically about the police themselves? What should that look like? And what should the orientation of police be in those moments?
So I am not in no position to tell someone how they should protest in regards to police brutality and their experience with police departments. What I will say is that I've learned in my years of doing this work that you protest, but you protest with a purpose. And so for me, yes, I'll be the protester to scream Black Lives Matter, no justice, no peace, but I'm also going to push you to do something. Tito, being a mentor of mine, taught me a long time ago is you never sit down at a table with someone who has the power to do something and walk away with nothing. And so my point was to hold space for my people and my community because we needed an outlet to deal with the PTSD, anger, and hurt that we're experiencing for having to be here again. But the other piece is to push those who we elect in office to do the things we need them to do, because a police officer should be held accountable in the same manner that a regular citizen is held accountable because he took an oath to take a job to protect and serve. And so that's the thought process in regards to that. But I will never be the person to tell anyone how to protest, mainly because protesting looks different for everyone.
I'd like to grab a call here, 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK to join the conversation. We've got Robin on the line from Lowell. Robin, go ahead.
Hi, I was at the protest last night. I'm 62 years old. I did not like having to go out of my house and be present where COVID could be, but I felt I had to. And I think Hiawatha is trivializing people's going out because there is a need. We have to stop.
I appreciate that.
This violence.
I appreciate that, Robin. You know, Tito Jackson, yesterday we had Boston City Councilor Kim Janey on the air, and she talked in very strong terms about the fact that the same people who are being disproportionately affected by COVID-19 are now forced to go out and put themselves at risk to protest because of being disproportionately affected by police brutality and systemic racism. Robin's bringing that point back around. How are you thinking about that today?
Well, I'm one of those people who's disproportionately affected by COVID-19. I had it. I actually got up. Hiawatha, I don't agree with the perspective that this is something that people were taking advantage of. People have a right to be angry, and they should be angry when folks who are on public payrolls are judged by different rules. And when we consistently see a small population, 13% of the United States population, disproportionately killed by law enforcement officials. That's unacceptable, hands down, and we need to make sure that we stand up and have our voices heard. Now, as Monica and Black Lives Matter and everybody out there last night, we were able to do this peacefully, but when it comes down to it, people's voice need to be heard. And I think people also need to realize in 2004, when the Red Sox won, what happened? and countless times throughout sporting events that I absolutely don't believe are on this level. You see things happen. What we were able to show last night is that people can come into our community, their voice can be heard, and we can get something done. And I think it is notable that Monica, the night before, had Elizabeth Warren, Congresswoman Ayanna Pressley, as well as Senator Kirsten Gillibrand, who were actually now signing on to three pieces of legislation that would prevent people from being shot in the back, a piece of legislation that requires officers not to choke folks out and kill them, as well as another piece of legislation that requires medical attention when they're asked. And that's the Gardner bill, the Andrew Kearse bill, as well as the Stephon Clark bill. So this has an end, has a goal, and it's not only about what we're about blowing off steam. We have to be there to do this, and this is what democracy looks like.
I want to turn to another call and then come back to Monica and Shagun, but I do want to say, I just for the record, I felt like what I heard Hiawatha saying at the top was that the people who were out at night were people who were feeling getting out after COVID-19. I didn't hear him saying to Robin, the caller, that he thought people were protesting COVID-19, just to clarify there. I do want to grab one more call here, 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We have Mary Ellen on the line from East Ham. Mary Ellen, go ahead.
Hi. I think that we should think about that the fact that the Defense Department has provided police all over the country with surplus military equipment. I think it's contributed to the formation of a not just a groupthink, but almost a military groupthink. And I've seen that in my own community when up the Cape when it was moved here. And I was shocked when the police department went from 3 to 9 over a period of 20 years, no claim change. But the way in which officers carried themselves was they were always wearing flak jackets, they were always carrying weapons, and this is a community or this is where murder, gun carrying, and so forth is not.
So, Mary Ellen, let me take it back from you there. Thank you for raising that. I want to turn to Monica and Shagun and ask you, did you see a police presence in riot gear, in more military style last night, and what was your reaction to that?
Well, so this is Shagun. I mean, I would say this kind of ties to your question to Monica earlier about the role of police at these protests for the reason that folks are gathering. I mean, my opinion is that I don't think police should be there at all. I think we've shown for the last 3 protests that have happened in the last 5 days that we are able to assemble peacefully. The problems always arise when the police have shown an unprovoked, show of force, where it antagonizes the crowd and folks respond in kind. And so, you know, to Mary Ellen's point, I mean, I definitely agree that, this gear can, helps to boost this mentality that that our police are at war. But to be honest with you, the police have always operated as another type of gang in our community. And it's never really been about the gear, but just the mentality and the power that our policies give them. You know, Tito mentioned that they are public servants that operate with another set of rules. And so that alone gives this holier than thou and this powerful mentality that they can do and say whatever they want. This is something that we experienced yesterday after the protest. Monica was very clear at the end of the protest that everyone is going to turn around and go home. That if you do anything to tear up the Black community that you're in, that the Black community will not allow that to happen. And all of us were walking away peacefully, going back to our cars or other modes of transportation. And for some reason, the Boston Police Department decided to roll up on the crowd. And this is what antagonized the crowd yesterday. But if the officers had not been there, folks knew why we were there, why we were protesting, that it was supposed to be peaceful, and we would have left the same way. So really, it's about police presence overall, not just what they're wearing or the weapons that they have.
So, Monica, what was your reaction to that moment, and why do you think the police came in all of a sudden then?
So I don't know why. I'm not sure why the police came in, but as we watch what has happened across this country, oftentimes police departments have been in a position of prompting the violence, and they actually start the shoving and pushing, and then, you know, as children, we're told if somebody hits you, hit them back, and so when people respond, then it turns into something way bigger than what it's supposed to be. On yesterday, I'm not quite sure why they came through the crowd the way that they did. But what I will say is that for the most part, it was a peaceful event. There were a couple of tense moments where they came through the crowd and we weren't quite sure. And immediately we told them they had to go. And Tito Jackson played a role in that, letting them know, I don't know what your presence is here and what the hell is going on, but turn around and leave. And they obliged. I also want to say that throughout the whole time yesterday, I did see the police presence in the situation that the gun pointed out. But throughout the whole rally, I didn't see tanks and things like that that were there. And I'm not sure if it was around the corner on a side street, because that very well could have been the case. But what I will say is that the community we held the rally in yesterday was our community. And I don't worry about what the police are doing. I don't worry about what elected officials are doing. But I live here and I raise my children here. I'm born and raised here. And so I ensured that we had security for my people, aside from whatever the police's agenda was or what their plan was, because it does not concern me. And I think what people need to understand is we're cool with the protesting. It's not, I'm not in the habit of dictating how anyone protests, because Martin Luther King said it best, a riot is the voice of the unheard. So yesterday, just so happened to be the anniversary the anniversary of the Roxbury riots. And that happened, I think, in either 1967, 1968. And so it wasn't until we started protesting that movement happened. 5 days went by before an arrest was made in George Floyd's murder. And so when people started protesting and tearing up the streets, then action was taken. And so both things need to happen.
So I want to turn to Tito for a minute now. Tito, you stepped in last night with a bullhorn at a moment at the Boston Police headquarters when things got tense. You were trying to calm them down. There was some video of that. I want to play a little bit of the tape of what you said.
Yeah. I'm a 6'2", 270-pound black man. I'm angry as hell. But when it comes down to it, these men and women back here don't set policy in the city of Boston. The people at City Hall set policy in the city of Boston.
Yes. Did the protesters around you hear you about the public policy argument you were making there, Tito?
Interesting place to give a public policy speech. I think they actually heard me more than the people in City Hall when I was there. When it comes down to, that conversation, I applaud people's use of their First Amendment rights. They have a right to be there. They have a right to speak out, and they listened. I had many deep conversations with young people around how things work, around budgets in the city. And Monica and I always talk, and actually Shigun too. A budget is a value statement. Where you put your money has to do with the values that we have. And so, we don't run out of money for the police department in the city of Boston. I also let them know that all of the police officers who were standing there were on overtime. And so, in fact, the resources that we're talking about, more of them were going to the folks there because we were standing there. But it was an opportunity to connect with folks. I do want to note the police officers who were there, they took a knee with us in solidarity.
Yeah, what about that?
You know what? There was a superintendent there, a black woman, who led. She stepped forward and she took a knee. And all of the other officers, I'm sorry, not all, all other than two officers took a knee. You know what? Maya Angelou said, when people tell you about themselves, believe them the first time. You know, and I spoke to some of the officers and I said, hey, you know, those are two individuals you guys need to think about when it comes to how they're interfacing and interacting with our community. But we did have that moment, and it was a very important moment. The young people there said, hey, if you guys take a knee, we'll leave, we'll go home. And there was this connection when we all took a knee together. And I can't, and one of the other other pieces that we need to deal with in Boston is we need more Black police officers in our city to be able to be part of the Boston Police Department. And we need a recruitment, not only strategy, but we need to change the rules so Black police officers can get in. We also need to make sure that the work that Shagun was doing around every officer having a body cam, as well as the work that has been brought up about us having a civilian review board with teeth. We can't point fingers at other cities without looking at ourselves.
So I want to, we've got about a minute left, and I want to turn to Shagun and give you kind of last word here. Shagun, Tito said that he thought the protesters heard him more than people in City Hall did when he was a city councilor. You talked about fatigue at having to be out there protesting again. Is institutional change going to happen? Do you believe it can?
Well, because of the efforts of folks like Monica and Tito and Black Lives Matter Boston and many others, I'm absolutely confident that there's going to be institutional change that happens, because we're not going to let this particular moment slip us by. And so, you know, yes, we're tired of being out there, but, you know, the whole thing behind that, there's a lot of energy behind that to ensure that we don't ever have to be out there for this particular reason again. And so, you know, the goal is to make sure that not just City Hall in Boston, but that the other 350 cities and towns in Massachusetts hear this message loud and clear, because a Black person should feel free to go anywhere in the Commonwealth. And this exact message is also being brought to the State House to ensure that the 200 elected legislators there in the House and the Senate hear this message loud and clear, and that the governor himself hears this message, and that they are forced to do more than release a public statement saying that they hear us, but ensuring that they actually listen and follow through.
All right, I'm going to have to end us there. That's Shagun Itawu. He's the executive director at the Black Economic Council of Massachusetts. Thank you. Tito Jackson, former Boston City Councilor and special advisor to Parenting Journey, thanks so much for being with us. And Monica Cannon Grant, founder and CEO of the nonprofit Violence in Boston and organizer from last night. Thank you, too. I'm Tiziana Deering. This is Radio Boston.